You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Everybody, welcome to We'll See You in Hell, the podcast brought to you by the Fangoria Podcast Network, the newly formed Fangoria Podcast Network. For more information about this network, including other programs and how to follow our show and find all the past episodes of our show and the other shows, because there's a bunch of shows, just go visit Fangoria.com, please. To my left, Patty Walsh in full beautiful stereo.
Hey guys, it's good to see you again. We haven't done this in a very long time, Joe. I know we just released one a couple weeks back, but it's probably been a good month since you and I have hoisted the old mics to our lips.
I'll tell you, it's been hard to stay away with this riveting energy you bring to the table.
Oh, shut the fuck up. Joe and I were in a furious text battle on the way over here. He writes, when are you going to be here? I'm thinking about jumping in the shower. 3 minutes before I'm supposed to arrive. Like, you couldn't think of this earlier?
Sometimes you're late.
Not tonight, baby.
I'm
rolling down sunset, and it corrects it to subset.
The spell
stupid
check.
Autocorrect. Yeah. Joe goes, what the fuck is subset? That's not a street name.
I was joking.
And while he does it, he says, fuck you, and it comes out, fuck your. And boy, my dick became so hard, because while he's chewing me out for an autocorrect error, he hits me back with one of his own. And then, folks, he pretended he tried to do it.
I know. I did try to pass it off that I was doing a bit. But
I know you too well, baby.
You know I'm not sharp enough to make a joke that quickly.
I did. I knew you weren't smart enough or funny enough. And I jumped all over it. So then at 8 o'clock sharp, I pull up. I go, you know, he goes, come on in. I go, your dog's going to go nuts. He goes nuts even when Joe opens the door.
You're leaving it. How are you a writer for television? The details you're leaving out.
What am
I
leaving?
He goes, come on in. I was indisposed, and I said, just let yourself in. And then you said,
I left out. He's in the shower, folks.
Yeah.
I didn't want to get you too aroused.
Well, look, the reason I'm giving you shit, probably, and it's got to do with our topic for today, sloth.
Yeah.
This podcast, it's a goddamn fucking burden. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Whenever you're coming over to do this, I'm never looking forward to it. I'm not excited about it.
Oh.
I'm excited to see you.
Yeah.
I'm excited that people, for some reason, want to hear us talk to one another. But
something about the phrase have to do. Like, we have to do a podcast, because we do. Got to meet a deadline, whatever else. When I hear that have to do, I shut down so hard.
And it's the loosest deadline. I mean, the folks at Fangoria, as you'd imagine,
be nicer.
They're not corporate.
No.
They're not corporate, you know, tyrants. So this is a very pretty open-minded, laid-back crew we got over there.
I mean, I've never been to the Fangoria offices, but I'd imagine, you know, there's a lot of, like, Halloween party-style cobwebs, a lot of fake spiders. Maybe a big bubbling cauldron of fruit punch.
I always pictured a sort of a Pee Wee Herman style decorative thing. There's maybe a talking, frightening chair. And a
bowl of grapes that they tell you is eyeballs.
Yeah. And then a stuffed dummy in the corner with one of those rubber Halloween masks on it. When you walk by, it goes, woo, hoo, hoo, hoo.
Yeah, sure.
You know what I mean?
We did a Halloween party when I was a kid, and I turned my entire basement into a haunted house. It was incredible.
Yeah.
And at the end, my mom hid in our giant freezer, and she popped up like a living corpse out of this freezer. We cleared all the chicken fingers and shit out of it. It was truly horrifying. Like, all my friends were like, you don't expect that. It was a lot of like, oh, here's brains, and it was spaghetti. And, like, you know, kids are 10, and like, ew, gross. And then at the end, when my mom comes flying out of this fucking...
You had one of those floor freezer things with the... You open it from the top.
Boy, people went fucking nuts.
Now, you turned the freezer off before she got in there, I assume.
No, she passed away. She was frostbit. That was what scared them. I opened it like mom, and then they to like be face-to-face with a corpse. This is a dark joke.
This is...
My mom is alive and well, and I love her very much, folks.
I'll tell you another thing that annoys me about this podcast. Look at our levels. Now, we're staring at a computer screen that shows our levels as we record. Look how much lower than me you are.
Well,
and
I'm not.
Every week I readjust this, so I don't have to adjust it again. And then every week we do this, and then you're too low again. I don't understand what is happening.
Well, maybe it's that I talk normally and you scream like a damn banshee.
Well, Pat. I'm not a happy man.
No, I know.
And it's been stated on here before, and I'll say it again.
Yeah.
I'm not a happy man. We live in a cesspool.
We're talking today, folks, about Sloth. The podcast, if you've been away for a few weeks, has a new format, and it's about sin. Each week's a different sin. It's a loose framework for us to discuss, you know, what's going on in our lives, movies, etc. This week's about Sloth, easily the most horrifying to me in the film Seven. Speaking of things jolting awake that you thought were dead, that really fucked me up. That was probably the scariest scene I've ever seen in a movie.
I'll tell you what my experience was with that scene. My friend Jerry had seen the movie before I did, and he was with me when I saw it the first time. And the entire movie leading up to that, he kept like hauntingly warning me out of his own tension, because he didn't want to see the scene again.
Yeah,
how bad this sloth scene was going to be, and I will tell you, it delivered on all counts.
It's insane. You almost can't set it up too much. I saw it. A buddy of mine and I snuck in. Well, we bought a ticket for some PG movie, and then snuck into Seven. And I had not seen many R-rated movies at this time. I think I was like 14 or something. And that scene fucked me up in a really severe way. Then later on, my dad decided, as I was getting older, to start letting me see the occasional R-rated movie. Seven, he thought, was fine. There couldn't be any nudity in Seven. Cut to a 10-minute sequence of a guy talking about being forced to fuck a woman with a knife.
But you didn't see it, is the point.
Right, which was probably better to him than me seeing a nipple, for Christ's sake.
Well, that's how all those parents thought back then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But as that scene's coming up, I'm telling myself, okay, you can't let on to my dad that I know this scene is coming. I have to be just as scared this time out, you know.
Sure.
I was thinking I was going to have to make myself jump to prove that I hadn't seen it in my mind.
That would look believable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then, you know, of course, just watching the scene a second time made me shit my pants all over again. I didn't have to act.
Yeah, it's that's a rough one. Speaking of shit.
Yeah.
That's why I had to get in the shower.
Oh, Joe.
I was getting ready to do the pod here. I was setting up the mics and everything, and I had a feeling come over me, man.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you, I could have fertilized the Serengeti with what I did in that toilet. For years, baby.
I don't love this.
Years.
Humor.
It was a real mess in there, and I had to get a shower, so I apologize.
It's all right.
I apologize.
Now, what happens if you do that at work? I've never, like, taken a shit where I was like, I need to get a shower now. What are people doing?
I mean, I could have gotten by without a shower, but I felt better getting a shower. We're going to go out on the town after this tonight, as we often do after our cast.
Sure, you got to celebrate another slam dunk.
Yeah, and I just said I want to be fresh. Yeah. I want to be fresh for the ladies that, you know, we're talking about going to that salsa club that just opened.
Yeah, right. I brought my best cummerbund.
Now, before we get into Sloth, I know we're kind of circling here. Well, actually, this relates to Sloth. One of the things you and I both do as two lazy men is watch a lot of movies.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't take a lot of effort, doesn't take a lot of activity. You kind of lay there, you watch. I mentioned Pee Wee Herman earlier. I got to talk about this. I mean, I think it was supposed to be a movie. That new Pee Wee thing is, holy shit.
Well,
and I respect Paul Rubens. I'm not shitting on the guy. I respect the people involved with the film. But, I mean, my God almighty, I couldn't. It was one of the most not funny things I've seen in a long time. And they added this whole dark. Well, why did they make Pee-wee sort of like sinister all of a sudden? And like really selfish and shitty. And
yeah,
there's that running gag through the movie where it goes, I'm going to let me go now. Like where he's like really mean to everybody. And I'm like, what is this? And then he kind of looks like he wants to fuck the guy from Magic Mike a little bit through the whole thing, which that's fine. Right. But like, it's just, it's like all these, you're throwing me too many Pee Wee curveballs right now. I don't know what to, I don't understand what the.
It was a lot. I loved that wink where Manganiello's like, well, have you seen this? Have you seen Magic Mike? And he goes, you'd think so, wouldn't you? Thought that was funny, but I'm like, so you're basically hinting now that Pee Wee is a closeted gay man or something, which was never really in there before.
Well, because it's...
he was a child. I guess the old stage show was more adult.
I don't want Pee Wee being sexual in any way.
Yeah.
At all.
Agreed.
Okay, it bothered me on the TV show when Miss Elaine, Miss Yvonne,
yeah,
was holding the dumbbell and she fell down with it and the bar bent to the shape of her tits.
Sure.
I didn't like that.
Right.
Even as a corny kid, I didn't like that.
Well,
it's, don't mix
Big
sex
Adventure
in with this.
And so forth, when women come on to him, he's extremely uncomfortable. And you don't know if it's because he's asexual or gay or what.
He's
child. It's that he's a 10-year-old boy, I think, is supposed to be the takeaway.
Well, in the first movie, that hot piece of prosciutto, Dottie is trying to bone him, and he's making a mockery of her for being romantically interested.
And it was hilarious.
Suddenly, in this one, they got that whole thing where he's making Joe Montaigne. What the fuck's the guy's name?
Manganiello.
He's making him a milkshake. Yeah. I mean, is that enough of a metaphor for you?
Yeah.
I gotta pump the milk. He's literally like pumping vanilla.
Yeah.
Into the. Come on, man.
Well, look, I saw it probably 6 months ago. I have not seen the final new version. That's
where'd
on
you
Netflix.
See it?
I saw it with our friend Pete and Apatow and his wife.
So you saw this with Pete Holmes,
yeah,
our friend, Judd Apatow, who produced the film,
right?
Who Pete is also working with.
As am I.
And you're writing on that show now.
Yeah.
Boy, this has been a long having to pretend you liked something, hasn't it?
So you've really trapped me. But when I saw it, as I said then, I don't know what changes they made, but I was like, I thought the opening scene with the alien was hilarious. I love the alien's voice. And then throughout, yeah, it was no Big Adventure. I thought it was on a par with like a Big Top Pee Wee.
It was worse than Big Top Pee Wee, which was astounding
told,
to me.
I saw it, no music, and was told the music would help out greatly. And I also, here's a fun fact for you. When I saw it, Paul Rubens came out and talked, and he's about 60, and, you know, he looked like a fit, vital 60 years old. But he had in the film, every scene, he had a clamp attached to the back of his neck, pulling his entire face skin back. And he was like, you're going to see this weird clamp on my neck. We're digitally removing it in post. So every scene when I'm trying to watch and enjoy this movie, his face is being held back with a metal clamp. So it was very jarring and difficult to enjoy, and I have not seen the final product. But
I'll tell you, I think you saw a better version. I mean,
right.
I would have appreciated a clamp or something. Something, just something to keep me interested.
Did you watch the whole thing?
I tried, man. I tried several times, and I picked up where I left off, and I couldn't get through it, man. It's not. He's also, I hate to say this, he's not nailing the Pee-wee character. It's not there. Like, it sounds too much like he's just talking in his Paul Rubens voice. There's not enough of the, like.
Well, he's 60.
Well, but there's not enough of that roller coaster in the pitch. And look, Martin
sure.
Short is 60.
Yeah, that's
you
true.
You see him do Jiminy Glick, it's fucking up and down the octave. You
that's
know?
True.
Like I watched it wanting to love it. And I also worked on Pete's show before you did.
Yep.
And got to work with Mr. Apatow, who was very nice. And we had a nice time. And I was excited to see it. I wanted to really like this. But I also feel like he's the kind of guy where you could say, like, nah, I didn't like that, and he wouldn't be, like, offended by it.
Yeah, I think so. I mean,
that's why I don't feel weird.
I win it. Pee-wee's Big Adventure is a top 20 for me. I've seen it 1,000 times when I was a kid. And I saw a real temp version. I'm not even prepared to comment on it, but I...
Well played, Patty. Well played. This guy knows how to work this town. Not shitting on the talents of anybody involved. I just did not care for the film. And in fact, they did do a sex thing in Big Top Pee Wee, and that bothered me too. When he bangs that Italian chick from Hot Shots.
Well,
and Rain
I remember
Man.
A makeout scene. Do they fuck?
They make out, and then it cuts to a montage of a train going through a tunnel and a volcano exploding.
Yeah. Which they also did in Top Secret and many other movies.
I mean, get that out of my Pee-wee movie.
I do agree with that.
It's too much.
But the old stage show was really racy as well. Maybe they're trying to get back to
it
that.
It was like wink to the camera racy. It yeah. wasn't, we're going to show a volcano exploding to represent jizz.
Valid point.
A man-child's jizz. Which, by the way, if you met Pee-wee Herman in real life, you'd be like, this man has a, it would be illegal to fuck him. He would be a retarded man.
Sure.
He would have a mental condition of some kind. So you couldn't bang the guy. If you were,
so inclined.
Well, unless you were of that. I'm afraid of the more I explain this, I'm going to get myself in trouble. But you know what I mean. I think it's illegal to have sex with a retarded person is what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, it is. Although I shared this story today at work to great acclaim, and I'll share it now. It's very brief. When I was in high school, I worked the Special Olympics.
Just for the chicks.
Didn't compete. I worked at the Special Olympics. And I was assigned a very sweet young girl with Down syndrome. And she's in a sweatsuit and she's competing in all the events. Mm. And I'm talking to my buddy Ryan. And all of a sudden, he steps back and he goes, Pat, 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 Pat. I'm like, what? I look down and this girl who was probably 12 years old, 13, has pulled down both her pants and underpants, revealing a large black bush. And is rubbing it.
Oh, boy.
She advances on me and starts rubbing it on my leg.
Oh, boy. And how old are you at this point?
I'm probably a senior in high school, and this girl was 13 or so.
Okay, so you're just young enough that you can go with it.
I threw my hands in the air.
Right.
I waved them around like I did care. I throw my hands in the air, and I'm like, I go, help, 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 help. And I'm screaming for any adult. And I go, Ryan, go get somebody. Please go get somebody. So he's looking around, and I was so terrified because I'm like, if the wrong person looks over here and thinks I had anything to do with this, I'm fucked. And this woman comes over and kind of pulls the girl off me and pulls her pants up. And I'm like, you have to understand, I was talking to my friend. I'm like stuttering and stammering. And she goes, they're very sexual. It's okay. They're very sexual. But I was deeply traumatized, and I had sort of repressed the memory till yesterday at work. An opportunity arose to tell this tale.
Right. Yeah. Well, this is what your response should have been when she went, it's okay. You should have went, for her, maybe.
Yeah.
That should have been your response.
Violated. Now, I'm hesitant to even bring up Batman v Superman. Do we do that at another podcast? Because I feel like you probably want to scream about this for 20 minutes.
I mean, I've said all I needed to say on Twitter. It's a fantastic movie. It's the best Batman ever. It's Gene Hackman level Lex Luthor.
I'm just gonna sit back and
It's an interesting interpretation of Superman, which is pulled straight from the comics. Same with Batman. And it was a fine piece of work. I really enjoyed the movie. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It certainly does not deserve a 29% on Rotten Tomatoes.
No, it deserves a 9%.
Oh, stop it. There was no humor. There was no humor in the other Batman movies. There was no fun in the other Batman movies.
I don't need humor in my movies. There's a great deal of humor and fun in Batman and Batman Returns. There's way too much in the other two Schumacher
There's
joints.
No humor in Batman 1.
I think
Tim
there's
Burton
plenty.
One.
Nicholson is... definitely bring humor.
Let's
to
talk
Kevin.
The Nolan ones, which were critically acclaimed.
Now, those did not have humor, but I thought they were, I mean, The Dark Knight, everyone loves The Dark Knight. I don't know why you wouldn't love
The Dark Knight. The Dark Knight. I love the Nolan trilogy, but for people to say this wasn't as good and far worse because it didn't have humor and it wasn't fun.
That's not what I'm saying.
It's a dark film. It's called a grown-ups comic book movie.
But I also thought it wasn't exciting or cool to look at.
Oh, I thought it was beautifully shot.
Or... I didn't care from one minute to the next what happened.
It was a frame-by-frame graphic novel. It was beautiful. There were panels recreated right out of The Dark Knight Returns.
Well, see, I'd never read that.
I loved that it was Death of Superman. I loved that it was Batman Returns, two of my favorite comics of all time, or Dark Knight Returns, two of my favorite comics of all time. I loved that Doomsday was in it. Lex Luthor, it was a brilliant, especially with the emergence of Martin Shkreli and those types of guys. It was a brilliant interpretation.
You liked Eisenberg.
I thought he was fantastic, and it made total sense. Of course, that's what that guy would be now. He'd be an upstart guy, And even down to the fact, this is how well written that part was. Even down to the fact when they talk about Lex, the name LexCorp, and they go, well, it's nice to meet the Lex in front of the Corp. And he goes, oh, no, 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 no. My father named the company. That's his Lex in front of the Corp. It's that is such a brilliant piece of writing because, of course, if that guy started the company, young Lex Luthor, it'd be called like Spibo or something like, you know what I mean? Some modern thing. And it's like, well, how do we still keep it named LexCorp but make him a sort of Facebook guy? Oh, well, we'll say his dad named the company and his dad started it and he inherited it and he's now this like cutting edge, technological, tech savvy, fucking, you know, what's his face?
The very few people I've talked to that thought the movie was okay, because I haven't heard anyone but you think it was better than okay.
I thought it was brilliant, and I'm not exaggerating.
Everyone, including those people, despised Eisenberg.
Oh, well, then everybody must be right.
I mean, if everyone thinks something, it doesn't necessarily mean it's right, but it means they might be onto something.
You're the only person I know that didn't like The Witch, and you refused to see the general perspective on that.
Didn't love The Witch, and I know lots of people who were very bored by The Witch, including the guy I went with.
You told me you didn't like it. You used those words.
Yeah, you know, I liked the tone, and I liked what it was kind of going for. I liked it way more than the guy I went with, and I know many people who didn't.
You thought 10 Cloverfield Lane was better than The Witch, which, if for anybody listening...
Significantly.
For anybody listening, now you know what I'm dealing with over here.
But, Joe, you're preaching to people who vehemently disagree with you. No. People don't like Batman versus Superman.
I guarantee you the Fangoria audience does not disagree with me on The Witch... And
perhaps The Witch.
I'd be willing to bet they're a hell of a lot more open-minded about Batman versus Superman than you are.
All right.
But what the hell do you know about comic? Are you a comic book guy?
No, not at all.
Well, that's why you didn't. It was a movie for comic book
but
fans.
But this is a world full
don't
these
give
days
a shit
of huge comic book fans.
And
they
all
didn't love the
guess
movie.
What? Every single huge comic book fan I know said it was phenomenal. Every single one.
I find that very hard to believe.
Every single one.
Are
with
you in
the exception,
I Love Batman versus Superman chat room?
With the exception of one Andy Levy from Fox News' Red Eye.
I know Andy Levy.
And when I talked to Andy on the phone about it, I could slowly hear him coming around and going, oh, okay, well, I didn't think about it like that. But they had elements of Flashpoint Paradox in there. Dude, it was fucking amazing.
I don't know what that means.
But and that's why you didn't like it.
All I can say is that I was excruciatingly bored from the first minute to the last. And that's all I have to say, because that's my opinion of the movie.
That's
if
fine.
I'm bored, I can't change it.
That's fine.
I started to doze during the fight. The villain was a large turd that couldn't speak, other than Eisenberg. And
Doomsday
they're all just kind of throwing each other into things.
Doomsday is made from Kryptonian DNA.
I'm talking as far as when I'm looking at the screen,
he kills Superman.
I'm seeing a turd throw around two guys I don't care about.
Because you don't get it. Because it starts as a sort of amorphous thing, and then slowly as he powers up, his bones start popping out, and he becomes the Doomsday from the comic books. It was great.
I couldn't.
I love the
about
sequence
anything.
With the Flash. I loved the little Aquaman thing. I loved the Wonder Woman stuff. I thought it was phenomenal.
Are we getting a whole movie with that dude as Aquaman and that dude as the Flash? These are all going to happen?
The Flash will happen after Justice League. Aquaman and Wonder Woman and the solo Batman movie are coming, I believe, after Suicide Squad.
When I think of the 60 interesting $10 million movies that I'm not going to see because of all this horse shit coming out, it makes me so depressed. I don't want to get out of bed if I think about it too much.
Well, there's back to our theme.
When I think
Sloth.
About the 300 $1 million interesting indie movies that I'm missing to watch
oh,
this pile
Christ
of
sakes.
Garbage.
Shut
a
up.
Turd, throw two people I don't care about around.
By the way, I love this. You were bored by it. This guy was glued to the screen, 10 Cloverfield Lane. It's three people playing cards for 90 minutes.
You liked 10 Cloverfield
Lane. I'm not saying
Lane.
I didn't like it, but I'm just saying, like, you want to talk about, like, nothing's happening.
All I can do is say what I liked and what I didn't like.
And then also, by the way, we're going to be spoiling these films right now. By the way, also, you want to talk about, you get to the end of the goddamn movie, and it's like, oh, it's exactly what it was supposed to be the whole time?
Well, we already talked about 10
John
Cloverfield Lane.
Goodman's evil, and it's aliens. It's literally exactly what, there's no twist.
We already talked about this. we shouldn't go back to it. We're on Batman versus Superman. But I thought it was insanely boring. I don't know why every movie has to be 240.
I can't wait for the 3-hour R-rated Blu-ray. I'm buying it the day it comes out.
You're watching that all alone.
I don't need you in my life, nor want
I
you.
I will not be there.
Good. I wish I was alone now.
As do I, Joe.
Now I'm starting to think maybe the podcast direction we should go in, maybe it's not about sin. Maybe it's us doing like a Siskel and Ebert movie debate
podcast. What it always was.
Maybe we need to get back to that. And every week.
You can't change the format every 3 weeks.
Do whatever the fuck we want. It's free.
These
people.
It's free and we don't make a dime. And it's free. Every time I'm coming over, like Joe asked me to do this podcast, I was like, yeah, sure. Then I'm like, why am I doing this? But it is fun and I like to see the feedback.
I think this is the birth of the new format.
It's nice to get yelled at by Joe on a microphone as opposed to just face to face.
I think this is the birth of the new format. It's We'll See You in Hell.
But you don't see all the movies. Like, I've seen a lot of movies
in the
past
2 weeks. Hold on a second. Can I finish my thought, maybe, before you say yours? How about I finish my thought? How about I finish my thought?
Joe, if I let you finish your thought, this podcast would be me nodding silently while you scream.
Oh!
Your thought is always in progress. Sometimes I gotta go, but...
Was that...
I have something to say now.
That's are you doing Dice Clay's woman voice?
When are we going to watch that Dice show? That's something we can talk about on the podcast next time.
I heard the Adrian Brody episode is a grand slam.
Well, I certainly hate Adrian Brody, but I'm excited to see
the
show.
The episode is Dice teaching him how to be a man, and yeah. Adrian Brody starts just impersonating Dice.
Yeah.
And apparently his Dice impression is like off the fucking chain.
All right, I'll see it.
But can I finish about the podcast?
Finish.
Every week, we discuss a film or films that fall under the Fangoria umbrella. It doesn't have to necessarily be horror. It could be sci-fi. It could be fantasy. Okay?
Yeah.
That we agree or disagree on, and we have a Siskel and Ebert kind of debate about them.
I think that's fine. We've had this format for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
That's
well,
nuts,
maybe we
Joe.
Get through the sins, the
it's
seven
like how you
sins.
Get a new car every 2 weeks.
We'll get through the seven sins and then we'll switch. Season 3, for all
okay.
intents and purposes,
like
will be that, okay?
I respect that.
Because I believe this is now season 2 of the podcast. That's how I look at it.
All right. I've seen a lot of movies since last we talked, but I don't think you've seen any of them. So that's why the Siskel and Ebert
thing. But it's fine. But my point is I can go to the shelf over here and I could say, Patty, The Vanishing. Let's go.
Oh, wait. You want to watch old movies?
No, I'm not saying watch. I'm saying discuss.
No, but I mean, you want to discuss old movies and not movies in the theater? Because that's not Siskel and Ebert at all.
Well, we can do both. It doesn't matter.
Okay. Why don't we go see a movie or two together each week and talk about it?
Oh, yeah. Because this isn't a burden enough.
wouldn't it be rough to see a movie with a friend?
Listen, remember when we were killing two birds with one stone and
yeah.
watching the movie while doing the podcast? That was too much. Yeah. Now you want to see a movie separately, then do a podcast about it.
No, I remember. We do go to the movies at least once a month.
My point is we could discuss. You know, here's a movie I'd love to discuss. And we're not getting into it right now.
Okay.
But in the future, I want to talk about Blade Runner. The movie bores me to piss. I can't get through the fucking thing.
I completely agree. So that'll be a boring episode.
It wouldn't be a boring episode because yeah. I would love for us to talk about why we don't like it.
And I've tried. Okay, here's the cut without the Harrison Ford narration. Here's the cut with the narrator. Here's the cut without the unicorn. Here's the cut with no unicorn. Two unicorns. No Daryl Hannah. Four Daryl Hannahs. There's 8,000 cuts of this movie, and none of them are good.
I can't. Let's save it.
All right.
Because the movie makes no sense, and I have great arguments for that, I think.
All right.
I was really going off. Pat and I went on an apartment crawl last Saturday where many of our friends had a specialty drink at their apartments, and then you'd go apartment to apartment, have a couple drinks, go to the next place.
Yeah.
Very fun. But, I mean, when we were in the depths of that thing, and, I mean, it got dark, people. Come 6 p.m. We started at 12. Come 6 p.m., we were real down in it at that point.
When we hit that last bar, people were, like, walking off on their own, bumping into walls. And
yeah.
It got real ugly.
And it went to about 10 p.m.
I looked over at some point. I saw Kurt muttering to himself in a corner.
Yeah, it was a real long haul.
Yeah.
But I remember somewhere around the 7 p.m. mark going off about Blade Runner. And whoever I was doing it to did not like it.
Well, I thought that was here on the Friday night prior. But maybe you did it
you know
two
what?
Days in a row.
I'm not going to lie to you, Pat. The Friday night before the pub, the apartment crawl, I was pretty out of my fucking mind that night, too. Because I got a new game. I downloaded a game on PS4 from the network called Zombie.
And
I was excited to play it for the first time last night, and yeah. I turned it on, and I apparently had put a good 35 minutes into the game.
Okay.
On that Friday night that we
yeah,
hung out,
no, you
no
were,
recollection.
You were ranting and raving about Blade Runner that night as well.
Well, then that's what it was.
Okay.
You know, we ate those weed gummies and smoked a bunch of weed and drank a ton. And that was a hell of a night, though. We spun
yeah,
all those records.
Fun. I feel like I've been working hard, and to bring it back to Sloth, which we have to do for at least a few minutes, I feel like I've been working hard for a long, long time. I usually have a long hiatus. I went from one job to another. I'm tired. I'm mentally exhausted. And when the weekend comes, it's the freaking weekend, baby. I'm about to have me some fun.
Well, tonight's my Friday. It's Thursday right now, but I switched my Friday off. I switched my Sunday off for Friday this week because we have to shoot on Sunday.
Yeah.
With the show I'm writing for. And so now I have Friday and Saturday off of this week.
Okay.
So tonight's my Friday.
We're going
and
out.
Tomorrow's my Saturday.
Yeah.
And Saturday might be my Saturday again, even though I got to work
and
on Sunday.
Sunday might be my Saturday, too. And
yeah.
Monday could possibly be my Saturday.
Monday's my Thursday. That's a hard rule that I don't change.
But now, see, we are talking sloth. Sloth essentially means laziness, and it's not good to be lazy. You know, in the grand scheme of things, Joe, you and I are not lazy, man. We're just not. We're hard workers. We're always working. We're always making money.
But is that sloth? Or is that the opposite of sloth? I mean, we work to survive. We work to fulfill our dreams. But I'll tell you something, man. I mean, we're going to go out tonight. We're going to have some drinks. We're going to have some laughs. Maybe a little reef. Who the hell knows?
That's gluttony. That's not sloth.
But hold on a second. Let me finish the thought, Pat.
You know, on a podcast, there has to be a give and take.
There is, and you just gave, and now I'm taking. Let me finish the sentence. My point is we're going out for fun tonight.
Yep.
If you walked, it wouldn't take much for you to convince me to not get out of this chair, is my point.
Oh, sure.
Even with a fun night in front of me.
But we do. That's the thing. I think most people, and I mean most, and especially when you're talking about the entire nation at large, are coming home from work every night at 6 o'clock, eating dinner, and then sitting on the couch and watching television until they fall asleep every single day.
Yes.
I don't blame them for it. I get it. But I am going out a lot, or else, on the nights where I sit in and watch a movie, I used to not be this way, and I miss it sincerely. I work a ton. I'm doing what I love. But if I sit for 5 minutes now, and I think it's the phones, fucked up our fucking attention span.
Sure.
I'm sitting there going, shouldn't I be writing something? Shouldn't I be doing something? And I think that keeps me from being slothful because I can't enjoy being slothful like I used to. I used to rent 6 movies on a Friday night, come home at 5 p.m. and watch all 6. I miss that.
6 movies?
Yeah.
So you'd go 6 p.m. to 6 a.m.?
Yeah, almost every Friday night.
By yourself?
I'd watch usually 3 with my dad on a Friday and maybe even a Saturday night.
This is when you're a kid, you mean?
When I'm a kid.
Oh,
and not
okay.
always 6, you know, 4, whatever. But that was all I did. It's all I look forward to. And I was so happy and so caught up in the movie. And now my brain is going every which way. And I'm not truly relaxing or being present or in the moment or whatever you want to call it.
I'll tell you, one thing I do like about working a day job is that 9:30, 9:45 hits.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm gearing up for bed.
Oh, sure.
I'm under the covers by 10:15. I'm reading comic books till about 11. My eyes are closing because I'm tired from reading, and I'm out. And it's a really nice night's sleep.
It's good. It's kind of what one is supposed to do, I think. And that's why I think I rebel against it. Like, I always sort of force myself to stay up till 1.
Well, we've always referred to you in Hollywood, Pat, as the Zach De La Rocha.
Oh, absolutely.
Of the TV writing world.
Yeah, I am. I am.
And that's what was said to me when I first moved here. Somebody said, do you know Patty Walsh? I said, no, I don't. They said, if you ever want to meet the Iggy Pop of sitcoms.
I pay a guy to walk around behind me with a guitar very quietly going, wow, because at any moment, I might strike.
What was that word?
Any meow meow.
I swear to God, I thought you were doing a bit for a second.
I was. Moment with a meow in it. I wasn't doing a bit. I just can't speak
sometimes.
No, it
just came out wrong. Yeah. I thought I missed a joke is what I'm trying to say.
Oh,
by the way, I got denied by Raya today.
I don't know any of those words.
Raya is that dating social app for like people in the biz.
You got denied?
They took 2 weeks to get back to me.
Do they know you have a Comedy Central special coming out?
I have a Comedy Central special coming out. I've got two behind me. I'm the vet on Better Call Saul.
Yeah.
I've written for multiple television shows. Yeah. I've been on Louie. I've been on Bored to Death. What the fuck do you got to do to get on Raya?
Why would they deny you? Did they give you a reason?
They said, listen to how fucking snotty this is. You ready for this?
Tell people what Raya is because I barely
know. It's a dating social app. For people in the
entertainment industry.
In the entertainment industry.
Okay.
And not that I am in any way famous, but you feel a little stupid.
In the grand scheme of things, you are. In the grand scheme of America.
But you feel pretty stupid going on to like an OkCupid.
Yeah.
And possibly running into somebody saying, oh, I saw you at that show. I like your comedy. You just feel kind of dumb. So this Raya thing is supposed to be like, look, man, you work... putting your face out there in any way.
Sure.
This is for you. But all my friends are on it. I'm like, okay, I'm going to join it. I join it. They say, we're reviewing your application. We get many applicants. Be patient. We'll get back to you.
What do you have to put on this application? Your credits?
Just your bullshit. Yeah. No. You just write your info, whatever. Then they check like your Instagram or something. So anyway, weeks go by. Weeks. I'm not getting any word. I'm like, I don't know. I opened the app today. It says, our board has carefully reviewed your application. Our answer is here. And there's a button that you have to press.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And then you press it and it says, you've been put on our waiting list after careful consideration. And it's like.
That could just mean they have too many people and they're trying to seem all exclusive and shit. It's like when you go to a restaurant and you're like, yeah, I got a table for two and there's no one there. And they're like, let me look. Let me see if we have any space. It's to make themselves seem cool.
It's I know that's what it is.
Yeah.
And fuck you.
Well, it's not necessarily a no, is what I'm saying.
But it's fuck you.
I bet if Ryan Gosling applies, he gets a straight yes.
Of course. Our answer is here. Oh,
that's pretty
fucked
up.
Fuck you.
Yeah.
Fucking eat me, Raya.
Why would you want to do that?
Well, now I don't want to do it now.
Is that such a big deal? You go out on an OkCupid date, and they're like, oh, I think I saw your stand-up special. Who cares? It's an interesting job.
My friend who I texted, I said, got shot down by Raya. She said, honestly, it's a bunch of models who don't have good social skills. So that makes me feel better.
Yeah.
And it does have a model-y vibe, like just the layout of the app and everything.
Right.
You know, it's a lot of fluorescent colors.
I think our friend Morgan Murphy is on Raya.
Everybody's on it.
She's in your same boat. You're both comedians. You're both semi-known.
Everybody's on it.
All right.
I can't get on the fucking thing.
Yeah.
I got friends with no specials on it. They put a lot of weight on Instagram. They say we're
followers.
They say, like, this is for people who live their lives and express themselves through Instagram. That's one of the things it says.
You want to be in that world?
No, I just wanted to see if it was, like, a good dating app. That was it. I just wanted to see, maybe I'll meet some, like, fun people in the business, whatever. Right.
Maybe you'll meet Rebecca De Mornay, like you've been trying to will into existence.
Yeah,
for some
that's
time.
That's what I was thinking. I had my sights set on Rebecca D.
Let that hand
Annie
rock
McDowell.
Your cradle. Annie McDowell lives on my street.
I know.
So come say hello.
And
she power walks around the neighborhood. She's divorced.
I'm praying for the day Mary Steenburgen and Teddy D. split up.
Don't say that.
I love the couple. I think
go
they're
for
wonderful.
McDowell. She's single. Why would you try to break up Hollywood sweethearts?
I wouldn't try to break them up. But I'll tell you, if that Mary Steez ever goes solo,
yeah.
I mean, she is dynamite.
You have the exact same taste of women as my father. Steenburgen, Andy McDowell. That's it. That's what he loves.
The funniest thing Brent Sullivan has ever said to me, our good friend who's a very funny comic, was he was telling me about his dad, and he goes, his favorite actor is Annie McDowell. And it was one of the funniest things I've ever heard a human being say.
My dad, I may have mentioned this on this podcast before, my dad used to tell my mom when they were married that he would leave her for Annie McDowell.
Now, Annie McDowell is divorced, huh?
I believe so. I've never had any particular interest in her. I've told my joke about her many times. I don't think she's a strong actress. I love her voice. I like a southern charm. But, yeah, I'd take Steenburgen 1,000 times over.
Steenburgen is could be on my list above, like, Marissa Tomei.
No.
I find Steenburgen to be ridiculously, ridiculously. Steenburgen to me is like another, like, Helen Mirren situation, where it's like she's going to be 70 and smoking hot still.
I think Tomei is the same way. Tomei is insane. Tomei's still getting naked.
I love Tomei. Don't think I don't love Tomei.
All right.
Okay.
Plus, like the beginning of Before the Devil Knows You're Dead, she's getting railed by Philip Seymour Hoffman.
It's the scene that makes me never watch that movie with my parents.
Yeah.
Because I think my parents would really enjoy that film, but yeah. I don't want to sit through that butt fuck scene.
It makes
that
you feel like
opens
maybe,
on.
Maybe Marissa Tomei had looked my way. She also went for George Costanza.
Yes.
You know?
This is all fictional, you realize.
Oh, really? I thought those were documentary. I thought The Seinfeld Show was a 99-part documentary.
You know what I'm realizing as we talk about? There's no need for sex in these movies. You don't need that.
What are you doing?
You don't need that doggy style scene at the top of it before the devil knows you're dead. I don't get anything out of it. I see you in hell. You know I will. I see you in hell. You know I will. I don't get anything out of it. I get something out of the next scene where they're laying in bed going, are we that old couple and all that stuff? But I don't need a movie to open on naked Philip Seymour Hoffman fucking, maybe in the butt, Marissa Tomei.
I think definitely not in the butt. I loved it.
Why?
Well, A, you got to see her naked, but it starts your movie off like, here we go. You know, like it gets your, you got to get people's attention.
But it doesn't serve a purpose to me.
I think that movie is awesome.
You know what else?
I think Hawk's great.
Seymour. I love that movie.
Hoffman is great.
I love
Shannon
that movie.
Is great.
I love that movie. There's a million things in there are a million yeah. things in that movie that could have set that movie off.
Yeah.
That sex scene has nothing to do with anything as far as I'm concerned.
You're talking like an old man.
And I'll tell you what.
I love sex in
I'll
my
tell
movies.
You when I didn't feel weird seeing Marissa Tomei naked in a movie was in The Wrestler because she was a stripper and it made sense. The
Wrestler was so fucking great.
It's great and it made sense. I'm saying that scene doesn't make any sense to me. Why do you, it could open with them in the bed. I would have still been in.
I hear you.
That's all I'm saying. Open on them doing drugs together. Something. I didn't get it. I didn't get that scene.
I'm going to do a quick shuttle through of the movies I've seen because I've seen a bunch. We're talking Michael Shannon, Before the Devil Knows You're Dead. I think he's an outstanding actor.
I've said time and time again, one of the scariest non-horror movie scenes is Michael Shannon's scene in The Devil Knows You're Dead in that booth.
Oh, absolutely.
It's fucking horrifying.
He's amazing in this movie called Bug that no one has seen with Ashley Judd.
Yeah.
It's like a weird, fucked up mental horror movie.
That is by your boy...
Tracy Letts.
Well, no. William Friedkin.
Oh, yeah. Directed it, yeah. No, but I was so excited to see Midnight Special. That guy made a movie called Take Shelter with Michael Shannon. Some of the best acting I've ever seen in my life. Rent it. Watch it. Take Shelter. It's amazing. And Midnight Special, I thought was going to be his jump to the big time. Folks, it's not a good movie. Didn't like it. It had a great sense of atmosphere. I was into it for like 20 minutes. And then it just started just really shit in the bed. And Kirsten Dunst and people show up and you're like, ooh, I like this person. I like this person. I'm into it. I'm it. And it just went nowhere. And then it went to a real stupid place. And it felt like a huge letdown. I thought it was going to, they all compare it to Close Encounters. Fat chance. It's not a great movie. I saw Hello, My Name is Doris.
How was that?
I liked it.
It's okay.
My coworker, Miss Beth Bears, was so good in it. She won't listen to this, so I'm just saying it out from the heart. I think she should be a romantic comedy star. She's so likable. Sally Field was great in it, and I don't even like Sally Field.
I worked with Michael Showalter
yes.
right after he completed it,
directed
and I would
it.
Like to see it. I have to say that... I think it looks fine. The trailers don't particularly excite me, but I like Sally Field and I
yeah.
like Michael and I would like to see it.
It's a much more interesting and kind of uncomfortable movie than you might think going in, and I really enjoy
it. Well, I like that. The trailers make it look a bit quirky.
Yeah, it's pretty intensely uncomfortable in spots. I liked it.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, that makes me want to see it.
And our buddy Kumail is in it in a small role and was very funny.
I just saw Kumail in Hot Tub Time Machine 2, and I enjoyed it.
That was a funny
him.
Movie.
I really thought it was very yeah. funny.
Had some great jokes in it.
Fuck a Dude was my favorite.
Yeah.
When
it's good.
Rob Corddry yells fuck a dude at the game show. I mean, I was beside myself. I loved it.
Yeah. Any movie attempting jokes, you know?
And it's
my buddy,
like
we're just dropping names that no one knows left and right tonight. My buddy Josh Heald wrote two, co-wrote one. The man's a super funny writer. And I thought it was super, super funny with a lot of great jokes.
And it's got like a 13% or something on Rotten Tomatoes.
Of course it does.
But that's what I was saying about Batman. So these ratings are unfair.
I never trust critics with comedies. I feel like these big bloated superhero movies are all kind of the same deal to me personally. But I know you feel differently.
One of my favorite comedies ever is The Watch, and it's got like an 11%.
That's baffling to me, too. I thought that was okay at best. How can that be one of your favorite comedies
ever? I think it's hilarious. I think it's like a dirty Ghostbusters. You got Vince Vaughn.
Ghostbusters, you got Dan Aykroyd getting a blowjob from a ghost. How much dirtier do you need it?
You got Vince Vaughn, you got Jonah Hill, and you got Ben Stiller.
Oh, the cast is off the damn charts.
All doing the best versions of the guys they do. Jonah Hill's doing the weird, like, mama's boy, like, psycho. Vince Vaughn is doing the fast-talking hustler guy, and Ben Stiller's doing the white bread suburbanite. It's like it's awesome. It's a great movie. It's really funny.
Joe, my favorite thing about you is your passion for things. I like right now I'm like, I guess I'll give The Watch another try. The Watch was not good, but I'm gonna watch it again.
I'm telling
because
you
because I believe in your passion.
It's a hilarious movie.
Alright, I'll try it again.
Deserved better than it got.
Even though I saw it pretty recently.
Did we talk about Sloth at all?
We're going to come back to Sloth when I'm done with the last movie I saw. Everybody Wants Some, the, quote, spiritual sequel to Dazed and Confused.
How was it?
Set in 1980. It's
it
a bunch
good.
Of, like, frat boys hanging out. It's like a Richard Linklater movie, man. It's not as good as Dazed and Confused or Boyhood or whatever, but it's, like, really fun. And I walked out with my buddy, and, like, neither of us had been cracking up the whole time or anything, but we were like, I would watch that again right now. He makes these movies that are just really fun hangs. Like, all these guys are frat guys. I wouldn't have probably liked them. But he makes everybody more interesting than they should be. There's beautiful, funny women in it. Everybody in it's going to be a star. And I recommend it. I thought it was a great movie. No plot at all. Nothing.
Really?
Nothing. There's not even, like, a big game they're trying to get to. Like, you know, Dazed and Confused, they pretend there's a plot. They got to sign that petition.
Sure.
There is nothing in this movie.
Sure.
And I loved it.
All right.
That's why I feel like, you know, these people agonizing over story. Comedy, it's not always important. Some densely plotted comedies are fantastic. I like a comedy where you're just hanging out with funny people.
Sure.
And they won't make those movies unless you're coming off like a Best Picture nomination. That's the only way you can make it. He was probably like, you can do whatever you want. And he's like, yeah, I want to do this script about people hanging out. It's the only way you can get something like that made. It's a shame.
Yeah, I know. He wanted to make a movie about Sloth.
Sloth, exactly.
Sloth!
Jackie Brown's a perfect hangout movie. And then when the caper starts, as fun and exciting as it is, you're kind of like, I kind of missed that first hour where you're like getting high with Bridget Fonda in a bikini top.
Jackie
you know?
Brown has some tremendous lines in it.
It's one of my favorite movies ever.
Some tremendous lines in it. I love the film.
When he fucks Bridget Fonda in the kitchen, she's like, you know, basically just says you want, and then he goes, "No, that hit the spot."
Yeah, it's great.
Genius.
It's great. And then one of the best acting choices I've literally ever seen in my life is in that movie, with when Samuel Jackson is talking to Robert Forster to get the bail bond or whatever, and Robert Forster he goes, "What's your address?" and he gives it to him, and then he goes, "Is that an apartment or a house?" and Samuel Jackson goes, "That's a house."
He's proud of it. Yeah.
The pride in the way he says it because
loved
he's
it.
Got so much to prove as this criminal. And then Jackie Brown gets asked the same question at some point, and she's just very, like, it's an apartment. Like, she doesn't care.
Yeah.
You know
There's
what I mean?
So many things like that in that movie. And it's on Cinemax or whatever every night, essentially. And I wind up watching 45 minutes of it, like, every night.
Yeah. I get very excited every time I'm leaving LAX and I walk through by that colored wall that she runs past at the one point.
I love when that scene between, Pam Grier's incredible, Forster's incredible, and then you'd think they would be huge stars off it, but no, they were just perfectly cast. And you don't really want to see him in other things necessarily.
Well, Pam, she had certainly had a resurgence after that.
She did
Forrester had not as much of one, but did have one.
But when they're sitting at the breakfast table and they talk for like 10 minutes and they're talking about getting older and he's talking about, you know, my hair started falling out. You know, I did something. I went and got plugs. That's like a whole conversation that has nothing to do with the plot, but it tells you everything about them. And then she's talking about getting old and she's like, you know, my ass is getting big. And he goes, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
And
that's
before big asses were in.
And
he's like, nothing wrong with
that.
That
got a huge laugh when I saw it in the theater.
In Missouri, it got a huge laugh.
Yeah. And but
people
the
enjoy
great,
a big ass.
The great thing is that he doesn't say it in a pervy or flirty way.
It's the perfect delivery.
He says it like a dad would. Like, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
You know?
When they kiss at the end before she leaves, I watched it recently with Heather, my girlfriend. And both of us were like misting up, like I had never had that reaction in the movie before.
It's a beautiful film.
You're like, you desperately want them to be together, and it's not even really a romance till that last second.
Forrester has also another great, he's great through the whole movie, but his other line delivery that's really fantastic is when they're in the car at the end. He's in the car with Sam Jackson at the end, and Sam Jackson goes, you like the Blue Notes? Whatever. I forget what band it is.
Yeah.
And Robert Forster just goes, they're pretty good.
Yeah. Delphonics.
Or Delphonics, yeah.
When I think Samuel Jackson was on Letterman, and Letterman, you could always tell when Letterman loved or didn't like a movie. Mm-hmm. If he didn't like a movie, he either wouldn't talk about it or he'd blatantly make fun of it. And he's talking about Jackie Brown to the extent where Samuel Jackson's almost like, can we talk about something else? But he loves, he's talking about, you know, Letterman loves Michael Keaton. He's going on and on about it.
Oh, yeah, Keaton, I forgot.
Yeah, playing the same role as Out of Sight.
Yeah.
But he's talking, and he goes, they sent me a clip over. Letterman's talking. He goes, I don't want to show that clip. Every scene in the movie is great, but I want to show my favorite scene. So I requested that they send over a different clip, and here it is. And they show this clip, and it's that clip where Samuel Jackson's sending the guy out to his car, and he goes, all you got to do is push this button. You're going to hear a little oop.
Yes.
And the door's open, and he goes, don't fuck with my levels now. You can play the stereo, but don't fuck with my levels now.
Yeah, I got them just where I like them.
They cut back, and Letterman is, like, clapping and, like, laughing hysterically. Like, you could tell that he was just so passionate about the movie.
Well, and also the scene between Chris Tucker and Samuel Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
The scene where they're standing over the open trunk, I believe, is fully improvised. I mean, it's like they're just... It's so natural.
Chris
and
Tucker,
so,
what a waste, man. He's got to come back.
He is. I liked his Netflix special that just came out.
Is it good?
I thought
didn't
it was funny.
It. Okay, I'll watch
it. I thought it was funny. He curses again, thank God. He got rid of that whole, like, I'm not going to curse thing.
Right.
It was funny. Yeah.
All right, I'll watch.
It was funny. Well, Pat.
This concludes our Jackie Brown podcast.
Yeah. Speaking
of
Sloth,
what are we doing?
I'm about done here.
Well, Sloth isn't interesting to talk about. I mean, we checked it off, but frankly, if we talked about laziness, that's not interesting. Lust is interesting.
The nice thing is we sort of half-assed our way through this podcast and talked about whatever we felt like and didn't commit to the topic,
do.
Which is what Sloth is.
Yeah.
In some ways. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Joe DeRosa Comedy, excuse me.
I am at The Patrick Walsh. You got anything to plug, Joseph?
Oh, what am I plugging? I am going to be, look, if you're in Scotland, I'll be at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival throughout all of August of this year. I'll be in Nashville in May for the Wild West Comedy Festival. Curated.
Is that still the Vince Vaughn thing?
Yeah, produced by one.
Awesome.
Mr. Vince Vaughn and Peter Billingsley,
yep.
I believe. So I'll be down there in May, and I'll be, like I said, I'll be in Edinburgh in August, and if this comes out in time, I will be at the Moon Tower Comedy Festival in Austin, but I don't know when this is going to drop.
All right, and what else?
Are you plugging anything?
No, I don't really got nothing to plug.
All right, well, you've been listening to We'll See You in Hell, a presentation of the Fangoria Podcast Network, produced by Thomas DeFeo, executive produced by Ken Hanley of Fangoria Entertainment. For press opportunities, advertising inquiries, and information about We'll See You in Hell, contact Ken via his email. It's ken@fangoria.com.
I know what I wanted to say.
Oh.
I looked on iTunes randomly. I hadn't since like the first couple weeks of the podcast. We have tons and tons of great reviews. And thank you all for doing that. Thank you to those who interact with us on Twitter. We always love it. Even if we don't necessarily respond, we take your suggestions and notes and stuff into consideration. Thank you very much. And you helped kind of stave off the people who were mad at Joe over his fucking...
All right. Well, thank you, guys. We appreciate you fixing the ratings.
Yeah, the ratings are up. Thank you very much.
All right, guys. Take care.